is The Talking Dead, a podcast dedicated to the AMC TV show The Walking Dead.
Hi, everyone. My name is Chris.
And my name is Jason.
And this is The Talking Dead, number 615, recorded sometime around December 25th, 2022.
In and around.
That's the best way of putting it. Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy holidays. It is what's become our annual Christmas Day podcast, at least released on Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. And I love doing these. The idea is we choose a holiday movie, generally a Christmas movie, and just talk about it. Unrelated to The Walking Dead, but fun to do.
I always have fun. It's always good to watch movies, especially holiday-related movies.
Yeah.
Or a holiday adjacent, let's say.
And especially this one. This one's not super, it's not really about the holidays or Christmas or anything like that, but it takes place at that time.
That's right.
So
much like Die Hard.
Much like Die Hard. That's right. And everyone thinks of that as a Christmas movie. Almost everyone.
Almost everyone.
Yeah. Occasionally you run into someone who doesn't, but they'd probably be wrong.
Well, it depends. You know, there's definitely a dividing line there. I mean, is it enough to be set at Christmas to make it a Christmas movie, or does it have to be about Christmas to be a Christmas movie? And all Christmas movies, every Christmas movie I've ever seen, most of the ones I've ever seen, seem to be Santa's in trouble, and Christmas is in danger of not being Christmas, and somebody has to save Christmas. I remember when Jasper was very young, after his first Christmas, watching a bunch of Christmas movies, on Christmas Eve, he said, are we sure Christmas is going to happen? It's like, yeah, it's going to happen. Why wouldn't it happen? It's like, because it's always in danger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he's learned anything from the movies, Santa needs help.
There's a real good chance that Christmas does not happen every year because it's always in trouble.
Always in trouble. You know, something funny happened this week. We were walking down our street, a week ago, and we noticed that there was weirdly already a Christmas tree out on somebody's front lawn.
Fuck this shit. We're going to the Bahamas.
Well, maybe. You never know. Like, I figure one of two or three things happened. Yeah, they had travel plans, so they got a tree early, and then we're like, well, no one's coming over to water this thing or be here, so we're getting rid of it now. I don't know. Or maybe in that house Christmas was canceled, Jason.
I like that idea.
It's a little sad.
It's one of my favorite Christmas ideas is if you have a fireplace, what you do is you just wrap a bunch of empty boxes and put them under the tree, and every time your kids are bad, you pick up one of the presents and throw it in the fire.
Oh, I think that would be pretty funny. I mean, maybe that's what happened, but it happened for real. Like, I can see that, kids are misbehaving. Guys, if you don't smarten up, Christmas is canceled. You warn them again, and then finally it's like, okay, Christmas is canceled. We're taking the tree down, throw it out front.
I would assume that it was somebody that had Christmas early with the kids and the grandkids, and then once the early Christmas was completed, then they buggered off to somewhere nice and toasty.
Yeah.
Didn't want the tree to fester in the house. You can only have a tree carcass in your house for so long before it becomes a fire hazard, right?
Yeah, that's very true. Well, I mean, that's probably the nicest scenario here, but I did think it was funny to see a Christmas tree out on the front lawn like 2 weeks before Christmas.
Were you walking down the street? You said we were walking down the street. Were you walking down the street with your whole family?
Just the wife and I and the dog.
Oh, that's too bad, because if your kids were there, you could use that as a warning. See what happens? See? This is what happens. If you misbehave, Christmas will be canceled just like this family did.
Right. I'm turning this Christmas around and we're going straight home.
That's right.
Yeah.
Don't make me come back there.
No. Anyways, Christmas is not canceled on this podcast, Jason.
No way.
And we are going to talk about The Apology. So this is a movie from 2022. It's this year. Uh-huh. Just came out on the streaming services, or at least some of them, for purchase. It's not, on Netflix or anything yet. And it is written and directed by Allison Locke. And this is her first feature-length film. She only has a couple of other directing credits that are short films. So first kick at the can here at a feature length movie.
Yep.
Now, it is starring Anna Gunn, who you might know as Skyler from Breaking Bad. That was Walter's wife on Breaking Bad.
Yep.
That's really the only thing I know her from, but I know she's been around a while and done a fair bit of acting. Is there anything else you've seen her in?
She's been in something else I knew. I forget what. I'll IMDb her while we're talking here.
All right. Anna Gunn is one of the lead roles. Now, we also have Janine Garofalo in a much smaller role, but she's there as well. But then the other sort of lead role in this is a guy named Linus Roach, who I didn't really know. But
I did. Absolutely.
He's been in a lot. I figured you would, because he did a bunch of episodes of Homeland, Vikings, Law and Order, which I know you love. And he had a role in Batman Begins, too, which I haven't seen in a long time, but he was in there as well.
Anna Gunn was in Deadwood for a little while. So, yeah, that's where I first saw her before she was Skyler White.
Okay. Cool. So that's really the extent of the cast of this movie. It is pretty small. And even Janine Garofalo does not have a huge role, but I can kind of understand.
Well, name three things that Janine Garofalo was in.
Mystery Men.
Yeah, that's one.
Mystery Women. No,
nope,
I don't know.
That's not one.
The funny thing is she's been in tons, but it's...
She has been. It's really tough to... See, Mystery Men is the one I know, but that wasn't a very popular movie. Like, it didn't do very well, but it was a good movie. I really liked it.
Me too.
It was fantastic.
I liked it.
Paul Rubens was the best part of that whole movie.
there you go.
My finger. yeah, she was also in a movie, I forget the name of it, with, now I have to IMDb her, where the dog on roller skates. What was the name of that movie?
I don't know, but did she do work on Saturday Night Live?
The Truth About Cats and Dogs. I don't know if she was on Saturday Night Live. Saturday Night Live is such a weird black hole for me.
Yeah.
Like, I know some of the big names that come out of there, but every once in a while I hear somebody was like, they were on Saturday Night Live?
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, so I'm not going to say either way, but I feel like maybe. But anyways, Janine Garofalo, been around for a long time. Hard to name something she's been in unless you're a big fan. But... you know, probably, to be honest, the most well-known name in this movie, even though she has a very small part.
I don't know. It's tough. It's a tough call. I mean, I know all those three actors, you know, from various things over the years. For me, absolutely, the three of them are kind of on an equal footing.
Okay, fair enough. So that's the cast. And here's the plot summary from IMDb. 20 years after the disappearance of her daughter, a recovering alcoholic is preparing to host her family's Christmas celebration when her estranged ex-brother-in-law arrives unannounced, bearing nostalgic gifts and a heavy secret. So that's the plot summary, and just to let everyone know, we are going to talk about this movie in detail. We are going to spoil it. If you are interested in seeing it and are worried about spoilers, then maybe go watch it first and then come back and listen to this podcast. Otherwise, stick with us right now and we're going to talk about The Apology.
Super.
So, Jason, The Apology. It's a kind of, I think they call these like locked room movies where it's all kind of in one location for the most part.
It's a play.
Yeah.
It's basically a play, a stage play.
More or less. Very small cast. People are there. They are essentially having a conversation. And these movies can come in different genres, right? This one is supposed to be a bit of a psychological thriller, I think, is what I would call this. And the premise is that this guy, played by Linus Roach, shows up at this house where Anna Gunn is, and he's kind of early for the Christmas celebration. He's there the night before, and he's there to have a conversation with her and admit to something that happened 20 years before. So that's kind of it. And, you know, hijinks ensue from there. And it starts kind of innocently, but very quickly gets into the thriller aspect of it and the sort of less innocent aspect of it, because he shows up and you know, the first thing that I noticed in this movie is, as in the plot summary, it says that she's a recovering alcoholic. She's been sober for 19 years.
Yep.
And he shows up the night where she is just about to fall off the wagon and relapse on back into some, you know, having some alcohol.
She pours herself a drink and then there's a knock at the door.
That's right. So the movie acknowledges how coincidental this is. And I sort of understand what was going on there, but I couldn't get over the fact that it was so weirdly coincidental if that was a part of her history. And this is the moment, the very moment, you know, when he knocks on the door.
Yeah. So let's get this out of the way. I didn't like this movie. I thought it was linear, predictable, like to the point where everything seemed to be, it was a bit awkward, and it wasn't even awkward really. Like there's uncomfortable, awkward situations in thrillers that you're, you know, something you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. This was just like, why would you show up in the middle of the night? Just no lights on. Don't knock on the fucking door. You're, you know, sleep in your car if you have to, or call CAA or AAA or whatever it is, in the US. I thought it was boring and stupid.
Okay.
The first part. And then as soon as he said, I have something to tell you, I'm like, oh, well, obviously he's the one that murdered her daughter. Then he puts away the knives, pours two cups of tea and puts one down in front of her. I'm like, why would you give her a weapon? Like, that's the first thing I thought of. She's got, now she has a mug and a boiling cup of water.
Yeah.
What the, are you stupid? And obviously the cup of, you know, was Chekhov's cup of water, went flying into his face, and everything just kind of played out exactly as I thought it would play out in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The only mystery that I encountered in this entire movie was why would she have a spade in her finished basement? Like, she had a shovel down there. What the fuck was that shovel doing? It was perfectly clean.
Yeah.
Sitting in her basement. That's the weirdest place in the whole world to keep your shovel.
Well, I was going to say maybe she doesn't have a garage, but that house clearly has a garage or somewhere outdoors to keep a shovel.
There's got
to
be a shed, right?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
why is, and then, so I'm thinking, okay, that plays into her revenge fantasy somehow, because she pulled it out and talked about her revenge fantasy, but then it just went away and there was no discussion of the shovel whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then she pulls out a hockey stick from her daughter's bedroom.
Right.
Like, why is there a hockey stick in the bedroom? Do you keep your hockey stick in the bedroom?
No, but I can see a teenager doing it, like a teenager who's super into hockey. Like, maybe that's the stick they scored their first goal with or something like that, right?
All right. See, that has an explanation a little bit, but that that shovel, that spade in the basement doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Okay. So you have mentioned a lot of things here, but basically, yes, that is the premise of this movie. He shows up and he starts talking about the missing daughter who's been missing for 20 years now, and it isn't revealed immediately. But he is there to admit that he killed her accidentally, in a way, 20 years before.
I don't buy that.
He's been hiding it for 20 years and he can't live with the guilt. But it's played, you know, and then things happen from there. And he wants to, he asks her about having like a revenge fantasy of getting back at the person who did this and so on and so forth. But the whole thing, before we get into that, I thought was played really weirdly, because on one hand, at first at least, and in a way throughout the movie, he genuinely seems like he wants to just come clean, get this off his shoulders. You know, he calls it a nightmare. He says the whole thing was an accident. And the movie's called The Apology. He wants to come and actually apologize, knowing that this is going to ruin his life and stuff like that. And in a way, maybe already has ruined his life. But so he's wanting to do that. But he also does weird things, like he brings a gun and he cut the phone lines because at one time she tries to pick up the landline and make a call. He's put something through the door to like bar the door closed. So, you know, he's doing crazy killer kind of things, right?
And he brought the tiniest little zip ties.
I know.
Teeny, tiniest little zip ties. I'm like, what the fuck are you going to do with those?
Yeah. Buddy? He shows her the zip ties he brought in his pocket, and they're stupidly small. I mean, I just feel like this was a prop department error where they're like, oh, crap, we need some zip ties. And, you know, every film set probably has them, but they only had little baby ones.
Go talk to the Grip. The Grip has zip ties.
Yeah.
He's got to have them.
Right. But at this point in the movie, I'm like, okay, he's here to apologize. He's here to admit his wrongdoing and face the consequences for it. So yeah. Why is he bringing a weapon? Why is he barring the door? Why is he like, look at my zip ties? I didn't get what was going on yet at this point.
This didn't make any sense to me. I didn't find this believable, and I was hoping for a twist. Two things I wanted out of this movie that I did not get. One was a decent twist where instead of him, it being an accident, mm-hmm. that's the first level of admission, right? I ran into her. It was an accident. I didn't know what to do. I freaked out and buried the body and then didn't talk about it ever again kind mm-hmm. of thing. That's what all serial killers say when they talk about their victims. It was an accident. I didn't mean to do it. I freaked out and I dismembered the body and spread it all over the state mm-hmm. kind of thing. That's mm-hmm. the first thing they do is they admit that. Then you talk to them a little bit longer and they go, yeah, I kind of bashed her on the head on purpose. And then you talk to them a bit more. And it's like, yeah, I kind of did it 6 or 7 times before I bashed her on the head. I bashed other people on the head kind of thing.
Right.
And so, you know, you get to various levels of admission. So he comes and he does this admission. I was hoping for another layer of admission because what he did was he did a number of things that would have played out better if he was a serial killer. And the entire point of what he did was to, rape and murder the daughter. First of all, who was 16 years old
mm-hmm.
in high school when she died, and B, torture Anna Gunn for the entire 20 years. And now he's come back to inflict more emotional damage as well as murdering her finally under the guise of, you want to know what happened? I'll show you what happened.
That's what you were hoping the movie would play out?
That's what I wanted the movie to play out because it was too superficial.
Right.
At the beginning, it was an accident. I didn't mean to kill her. I freaked out, and now I'm racked with guilt 20 years later. It's like bullshit. You're not racked with guilt and then disappear for 20 years and don't say anything, and then come back with zip ties and a gun
mm-hmm.
And a plan to apologize. You go to the police
yeah.
and you apologize.
Yeah.
And then, you know, can you tell Anna Gunn that I'm sorry
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. So I wanted that extra layer, but I didn't get it.
But even that, I feel like would have been a pretty straight up, straightforward movie. Like bad guy does something horrific, comes back and also does something horrific. Like there's no, like that's the character you expect, right? Someone who yeah. rapes and murders a 16-year-old, even though he says it's an accident. You know, it's only accidental so far.
Yeah.
So I feel like that kind of movie would have been pretty predictable as well. I think what they tried to go for here is the twist that as this plays out, we find out that what he's really there to do is have Anna Gunn's character, Darlene, kill him.
Right.
He wants to be murdered by her, you know, suicide by cop in a way, right? Do something horrible and get killed by the police. But this, in this case, he's going back to the victim's mother and hoping she'll murder him. That's why he brings the gun
yeah.
so that she can shoot him with it. And that's revealed fairly early in the movie, like maybe halfway through, 2/3 at most. So I think the movie is trying to use that as the twist. And I think what they wanted us to believe is it would play out the way you described. And then it's like, oh no, he's there to get killed by her and big twist. And now what's going to happen?
Right. So they're trying to subvert expectations
in that way, I think. Yeah. And that's why he brings up the whole idea of revenge. And at first she says, no, I've never really thought about that. I just want my daughter back. But then, of course, when he reveals that he is the killer, things change a little bit. She does admit to having some sort of revenge fantasy, whether that was something she had considered before I don't really know. Or maybe that just came to her in the moment, right?
It could be. Well, she had that shovel downstairs. Well, I assume that that was part of her revenge fantasy. That was her, you know, her workspace and storage space for, you know, for the search for her daughter.
Yeah.
And, you know, her memorabilia, all her schoolwork and stuff. So, you know, I assumed that that shovel would come into play. And the shovel, have you ever seen The Vanishing, 1993, Jeff Bridges, Kiefer Sutherland?
I have not.
Oh, you should. Well, it's almost exactly like this. So Kiefer Sutherland and his girlfriend are on a road trip. She goes to the bathroom. He waits out in the car. She never comes back.
Weird.
He spends the next bunch of years trying to find her. And it turns out Jeff Bridges, when Jeff Bridges is the bad guy, manages to get a hold of Kiefer Sutherland and say, "Do you want to know what happened to your girlfriend?" "Yes, I do. I'm going to do the exact same thing to you. And that's how you're going to find out. Is that okay?" "Yes, it is."
Wow.
And so it plays out like that. And a shovel takes an important part in that revenge, okay. Let's say.
Okay.
It's actually quite a good movie. So I would recommend watching that movie as far as, you know, missing person coming to terms or facing the person, facing the killer of the missing person and having it play out as a thriller.
Right.
Did it like 4.5 times better. It wasn't a fantastic movie, but it was 4.5 times better than this movie.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, that's the extent of this film. So once it's revealed that he did this and why he's there, you know, she does go down that path a little bit of making him pay for it. She has him zip tied to a chair. He shows her sort of the, you know, the room where all of the stuff that she has collected, all the news articles, the, you know, she's got one of those big walls, the search for my daughter kind of thing with pictures and everything posted up on it.
Yeah.
And news clips and everything else like that. And I didn't mind all of that. I thought that was a, you know, pretty straight up depiction of that kind of thing, which we've seen before. And then the film sort of goes into, she has him confined. Eventually he's tied to the bed and they basically have a conversation about what's going to happen now. He's begging to be killed and murdered to pay for his crimes. And the question is, will she do it or not? And how it plays out.
Which I saw the daughter's tape recorder recording the conversation like 7 miles away.
Yeah.
As soon as I saw that, I'm like, yeah, okay, we should gonna record the confession on that then, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's what happens ultimately. She records him confessing this and doesn't end up killing him. I wasn't 100% sure how it was going to turn out, but it is pretty predictable in that way. So yeah, pretty straight up. I didn't hate the movie. I think it was fine, if, you know, not great. I thought Anna Gunn and Linus Roach were decent. I actually think he was better. He was probably he had the best performance in the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was just kind of meh.
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of meh. The other thing I wanted out of this movie was a flashback. I know that it was supposed to be a, you know, basically a play. Everything takes place in a locked room kind of thing. Nobody can escape. There's a big storm. Power's out. You can't go anywhere. Nobody's coming to help kind of thing.
Right.
I understand that. But I think that this could have used a flashback of, you know, even different actors, him as a younger man 20 years ago, and having the story he tells play out on screen rather than just telling us about it. I think that could have been interesting and more thrilling, more anxious, anxiety inducing.
You know what I think might have been interesting for this film is to, instead of, so this all takes place, I think, as I said, it's the night before she, Darlene, is supposed to be hosting the family Christmas gathering, right? It's like Christmas Eve, maybe, or it's the night before that. And
Christmas Adam.
Sure.
Christmas Adam, Christmas Eve.
Sure. Christmas Day. That's the order.
No, yeah. Christmas Adam is the day before Christmas Eve. So you have Christmas Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
And then Christmas Day.
Yeah. That's so what
Adam
I.
Adam and Eve, then Jesus.
I got it. Okay.
All right.
What I think might have actually been really interesting, because we know that she's doing that, and that's all set up in the opening scene when Janine Garofalo is there and they're just hanging out. What if we saw this play out and we flashed forward one day to the Christmas gathering and we saw some of what was happening at the Christmas gathering? And the question is, where is he? Is he there? Is he alive? Is he dead? Is anything else going on? Did the rest of the family know? Like, how did what happened the night before impact what happened the next night at the Christmas party?
Right.
I feel like that would have been a really interesting way to do it. But, you know, it certainly wasn't that.
Yeah. I mean, this movie could have been so much more. It wasn't all that much for me.
Well, here's the other thing. The movie does not pay off the setup in any way. I don't think, not as sort of a genre setup, right? The whole film opens with this long drone shot slowly flying over the house, kind of zooming in, focusing on the house. And this kind of thing, there's a reason that the movie starts with this, or any right. movie starts with this, Jason, and that is to show this is an isolated house. Look at what's around: forest, lake, you know, yep. nothing else. This is isolated. So the people here are isolated. No one's coming to help. There's, you know, whatever happens, they're going to be stuck here. It's winter. There's a storm. That is setting up the whole thing. And so the isolation is supposed to be important. But in this film, it's not, really. It's revealed in the first 10 minutes that there are at least two or three houses in this cul-de-sac or whatever it is, because we find out that Janine Garofalo lives next door or across the street.
Yep. That was the best part of the movie when, you know, get home safe, watch your, you know, watch the steps, don't trip and stuff. And she gets in the, and Anna Gunn is watching out the window as yeah. Janine Garofalo drives away in her truck or whatever, and just drives across the street into that other house. I'm like, that was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I know. She pulls out of the driveway, across the street, right into the other driveway.
Like, what did she drive?
I know. It was kind of silly. But that's the thing. Like, there, the way the drone shot is used is supposed to set up the isolation, and that is supposed to play into the movie. It's supposed to make us feel like, uh-oh, no help is coming. So whatever happens here, they are stuck.
Yeah.
But it has nothing to do with it. This could have taken place almost anywhere, I think, because I never felt like there was any real danger by having them stuck in the house together and being isolated like that. I mean, there is some danger in this movie because they are violent towards each other at certain times. And, but that has nothing to do with being in this remote house on the lake, which it should have, I think.
Yeah.
So
they, I don't know. They set up a couple of things that, that didn't pay off. The shovel didn't pay off. She also picked up a large, paperweight that was in the form of a jack. And I've seen those things, and they like, it was like this iron jack.
Oh yeah.
And she was swinging that at him a couple of times. I think that's why he got the bump on his head at the beginning, because she swung that at him.
Right.
And then she dropped it in the snow on the porch. I'm like, well, I thought, well, I guess he's going to fall backwards onto that at some point.
Right.
Or, you know, there was this, you know, glass of vodka up in her bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought for sure he was going to burn to death with, you know, vodka all over him. Like, how, he's got to die somehow. That yeah. has to do with something they've set up previously. And they maybe it's that, you know, subverting expectations thing again. But they keep setting up these things that don't pay off.
Yeah. Or, you know, be smashed in the head with the bottle of vodka, at least. Something like that. I don't know.
Something like that. Yeah. Maybe alcohol could save her life rather than ruining it like she was planning.
Oh, you see, that would have been a nice change of pace or nice reversal of fortune.
Yeah.
Well,
but, and also when she was in the bathroom and she was looking for a weapon and she pulled out that plastic razor.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty funny, too. It's like, what the hell are you going to do with that?
I know. I mean, almost nothing. Probably turn it around and poke him in the eye with the handle end would be more effective.
I don't even know. Like, you could probably get a an eyeshadow pencil of some kind, or one of those eyeliner pencils.
Yeah.
Would probably do you better in that kind of situation than anything else. But then it is the downstairs bathroom, and there's probably not a lot of opportunity for, like, all the makeup is probably not in that bathroom.
I don't know.
I'm surprised there's a fucking razor in that bathroom, quite frankly.
I don't know. It wouldn't have been a very good weapon anyway, so. Well, I mean, I think that's about it for the apology. I was pretty indifferent to it. I think the setup doesn't pay off. Yeah, and Linus Roach, fine. I mean, he was pretty good. Everything else about it was okay. And it didn't do a lot for me. It sounds like it didn't do a lot for you either.
Not really. I mean, I'm just trying to think, would it be better if it was a TV show? Like, could you watch 12 hours of this shit? If they put in, like, more mystery and more flashbacks and more characters, I think they could have. This could be a TV show, an okay TV show.
You know what? You might not be wrong about that. Like, the premise is that someone related to you murdered your daughter 20 years ago and have been walking around knowing that for 20 years while you've been searching for the killer, basically.
Yeah.
You know, a 10-episode series about that takes place over the Christmas holidays, maybe, and the mystery is slowly revealed, and there's some good twist. Like, change it all up, and you have a good idea here.
They mentioned a lot of relationships in this movie that did not get shown on screen.
They do.
We had him as the ex-husband of Anna Gunn's sister,
right.
And he had an affair one night with Anna Gunn. And then there's the relationship with between Jack, Linus's character, and the daughter. We had, Janine Garofalo, the best friend that lives across the street. There's all kinds of relationships here that they just did not show on screen that could make for a compelling television show. Like, there's shows out there that are very similar to this, like The Night Of, or I think maybe The Night Manager, both really good shows that, take a single premise like this and fucking string it out through a whole goddamn season. You get some good character actors in there, and you got yourself a show.
Yeah, you do. I mean, I think you may have a point there. I wonder if this is based on a book or something like that. It doesn't seem to be. This seems like it's an original IP written and directed by Alison Locke. So I don't know. I was thinking if it was based on a book, maybe there was a little bit more to it, but it doesn't look like it is. So anyways, there you go. That is The Apology. Kind of a Christmas movie, kind of a psychological thriller.
Yeah.
Not really much of anything, though.
The real fun thing here is that there was only 6 actors in the whole movie, and 2 of them played the same character. We had the young Sally.
Oh, yeah.
And the regular, the 16-year-old Sally in a picture.
Right.
But so I think it's funny that there's 6 actors. One of them was on screen. There was a reporter that was on screen for like 14 seconds.
Yep.
2 of them played the same character. And then it was basically Anna Gunn, Janine Garofalo, and Linus.
Yeah, it's a small cast. It is a
very
small cast. So there you go. You can find that
Only one man. Usually there's the movies, a lot of movies only have like the only woman in the world show up in the film, and it's just the one woman. And the rest of the characters are men, but this is the exact opposite. Linus was the only man in this whole movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, is that something the movie has going for it then?
No, I just find that one of the more interesting aspects of the movie.
Okay.
I don't know.
Fair enough.
I mean, what's the name of that test where you have to have a...
It's the Bechdel test.
Bechdel test. I mean, this had the reverse Bechdel test. I mean, did Linus, like, obviously there was no other men, but did he have any conversations that did not revolve around his relationships with women? I don't think so.
Probably not. Not in this film, no.
So he was, you know, a murderer and an aggressor and, kidnapper, and because he kidnapped Anna Gunn in this. As soon as you say you can't leave, that's kidnapping.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so, he bars the door shut. For no reason. That doesn't really make a lot of sense to me.
Where's she going to go?
Yeah, where's she going to go? Exactly.
Anyway, weird little movie.
Weird little movie. It's The Apology. You can find it on Apple TV for sale and for rent, maybe. I don't know. That's where I saw it. That's it. That's the apology. All right. Let's do something else here before we call it a year, Jason. I wanted to do a little quick, since we're at the end of the year and we're at the end of The Walking Dead, and I feel like we're at a turning point or a transition point into new things to come, even though they're all Walking Dead related in the new year. I wanted to do a quick little podcast retrospective.
Okay.
About this show. Most of it is just kind of what we've accomplished in 13 years of doing it. You know, if I can call it an accomplishment, maybe what we've done.
Not quit. That's an accomplishment.
Yeah, that's right. Never stopped. That's pretty good. But so I have a bunch of numbers here and calculations and estimations.
Oh, we got statistics?
We got some statistics. Yeah.
Nice.
This should be fun. So
this is what I want as an afterlife. I want to have a fucking screen that shows me all of the things that I've accomplished in my lifetime. How many times I said, you know, each word or something, just a graph of word usage.
Sure. Which, every statistic, right? How many times you stubbed your toe.
Yeah.
Right.
Or how many miles of spaghetti did I eat?
Ooh,
kind
that,
of thing.
That would be interesting.
You know, how many times I've almost died? Like how close did I come to dying and by who, or have I killed anybody?
Inadvertently. You
know? Well, I would not know. I didn't do it on purpose. I've never done it on purpose. But has my actions ever resulted in the deaths of somebody else that I never knew about? These are the kinds of things I want to know. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to derail you. Please proceed.
That's fine. Those are not the kind of things I can tell you, though. But what I can tell you are things like this. Our first episode was on September the 9th, 2009.
Nice.
13 years ago, 13 and a bit years ago. Since then, we have done 615 podcasts, including this one. Now, when I wrote this, we'd only done 614, so that's the number I used for calculating some stuff.
There you go.
Although I wish there was an easy way to actually calculate how many minutes we've recorded across 614 podcasts, but there isn't, unfortunately, without going back and looking at everyone, adding it all up, and figuring it out. But that's not an easy way, so I didn't do that.
Good.
What I did do, though, is figure that every podcast is about 70 minutes. They're generally longer than an hour, but they're not too often longer than an hour and a half. So I just went with 70 minutes. I could have gone with 75, but 70 seemed, you know, straightforward. So I took 70 minutes, multiplied by 614, and I got 42,980 minutes of podcast.
Almost 50,000 minutes? Jesus.
That's right. So that calculates down to approximately 716 hours of podcast, which is 29.8 days of time.
Wow. That's a month.
So basically a complete month of audio recording across 614 episodes and 13 years.
Wow, that's 50,000 minutes that I'll never get back.
Never get back.
Nor would I want back. I don't want them back. They were well spent.
Yeah,
Every single one of them. Maybe there was a couple of minutes there that I could probably take back if I could. But sure. Other than that.
Sure. Well, that's good. So basically a complete month. Now, Spotify told me straight up that in 2022, we created 3,311 minutes of audio.
Nice.
And that's an actual number that they told me. They also told me that that's more content than 95% of other creators on the platform.
Really?
Yeah.
So well, Spotify is mainly music, isn't it?
No, but just the podcast department on Spotify.
Oh, I see.
So
we're in the 1% of fucking podcasting?
Not 95. So we're in the top 5%.
All right, good.
In terms of hours, or sorry, minutes created. So if you do 3,311 times 13 for 13 years, you get 43,000 minutes. And that's just an estimation. Let's say we've done about 3,311 minutes every year for 13 years, 43,000 minutes. When I multiplied our number of episodes by 70 minutes, my estimation, as I said, I got 42,980. So I feel like my estimation is bang on.
It's pretty good. I mean, the first year or so, we didn't podcast all that often, and we didn't podcast all that long. So yeah. That year kind of skews things slightly. Because there was no show back then.
I do agree. But I also think the 70 minutes is the average a little short. So it kind of makes up for the less podcasting early on, because we might have gone a little bit longer later. So either way, I think we are somewhere in the neighborhood of 42,000 to 43,000 minutes all time, which still calculates to about one full month of our lives sitting here talking on the internet.
And it's not just us. It's all the feedback too, right? They count a lot towards that, because we wouldn't have anything to talk about. Well, if the show didn't exist, we wouldn't have anything to talk about, but we'd be half that number if it was just you and me. So the listeners are a big part of that number.
Huge.
For sure.
Huge part of that number. Absolutely. I mean, that's another thing I would love to somehow get some stats on. How many minutes account for like an individual listener, right? Who has sent in numerous voicemails or emails or whatever. That would be very cool. But one more thing that Spotify told me is that we are in the top 5% of most followed podcasts on the platform too.
That's excellent.
So very, very cool. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to do with that other than just be like, oh my God, that's amazing. Thank you everybody on Spotify for following us like that. It's so very cool. All right. I continued crunching some numbers, Jason.
Nice.
And so here's where I started with this. There have been 177 episodes of The Walking Dead main show.
Mm-hmm.
We covered every single one of them. As of right now, there have been 101 episodes of Fear the Walking Dead. There were
really?
Yeah, 101. Can you believe it?
I think it's more like 17.
Sometimes it feels like 1,001, but you know.
Oh, it's far too many.
Yeah.
But it still doesn't feel like 101.
It's like three seasons too many, but hey. So it's 101 episodes of Fear. There were 20 episodes of World Beyond, and there were 6 episodes of Tales of the Walking Dead. If you add that all up, you get 344 episodes in the Walking Dead universe right now.
Cool.
I think I spend about 5 hours of time working on a podcast for every episode. Now, I know we often bulk up and do like two at once, or we do an episode of Fear and an episode of World Beyond because they were on the same night, things like that. But still, average, let's say, certainly for the main show, about 5 hours of time on each episode. And the way that breaks down is it's 2 hours watching the episode, and that's watching it once, watching it a second time to make a bunch of notes. I watch everyone at least twice. Let's say 1.5 hours of recording. Let's say we record about 90 minutes. And that's you and me sitting around, getting ready, talking a little bit, doing the recording, and then wrapping up at the end. And then about 1.5 hours of editing and releasing. Maybe I spend an hour editing and half an hour getting ready to put it out there. So, what's that? That's 5 hours of time on every single podcast we record. So if you take 5 hours and, on every podcast for an episode. So that's 344
right,
episodes
then there's
times
feedback.
5 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even factor those in. So I took 5 hours times 344 Walking Dead universe episodes, and I got 1,720 hours or 71.6 days just producing podcasts for those episodes.
Fun.
71.6.
My effort is more along the lines of real time.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a little bit of prep for the feedback episodes,
yep.
But it's not a lot.
Yeah. Just for fun, if you take that 5 hours and multiply it by 614, which is our total number of episodes, podcast episodes, you get 3,070 hours or about 128 days.
Hmm.
So I have spent, in addition to the 1 month of content we've created, you know, 128 days or so of time creating it, which is fun.
That's crazy.
Now, not to mention, we read 7 Walking Dead novels and talked about them.
Seven. And it feels like 3. There's more than 3.
There was the first one, the second one, a trilogy for the third one. So that's 5, I think.
I read them all.
Yeah. And then a couple more. So that's 7 Walking Dead novels. The Telltale video game we talked about. Yep. I mean, I played the whole thing. And sidebar, I recommend you play all the seasons. The final one is a fucking masterpiece. It's amazing.
Cool.
Anyways, plus everything else we've done, you know, on the podcast, all the Star Wars films, some other movies, stuff like this, just so much stuff we have covered and talked about and spent time on. And it's kind of mind blowing, but also friggin' cool.
So you should write this down, because you're going to need to have statistics on how much time we spent on talking about statistics.
Oh, yeah. I should keep track of this. You're right. So we can do a stats on the stats episode someday.
Yeah, meta stats, baby.
Yep. I realize the math is a little bit wishy-washy for some of this last stuff here, but still, like, fucking crazy, man.
What we need is AI to go in and analyze our content and give us a bunch of categories, even stuff we don't think about.
Right.
Like, how many words has Jason made up? I don't know. 50? 55? Something like that?
Could be plenty. Yeah. I don't know. How many words have we said individually? Like, can you imagine what that would be? Good God. All right. We recently surpassed 1,000 voice messages recorded from the widget on the website.
Cool.
And we have many more from people who just recorded their own on their phones or whatever. I don't have that number. And then if you remember, which you might completely have forgotten, but way back in the early days, we actually had a toll-free number.
I remember. We have it written down somewhere. I have it on like we got some USB bottle opener things, and the phone number's on there.
Yeah, we do. I printed off a whole bunch of like postcard size thingies with postcards. The number. Have plenty of those sitting around. They're completely useless now because that number no longer exists. So even though we've had 1,000 voice messages from the website since we launched that thing, many, many more over the years before we were using that. So that's quite the thing. In terms of downloads, I hope people find this interesting. I don't know. I do. I think it's wild and wacky, but longtime listeners might be interested in this kind of thing. I hope so. Anyways.
I'm interested.
All right. Fair enough. We'll see. In terms of downloads, what do you think our 4 top download countries are, Jason?
Oh, countries.
Countries.
England, New Zealand, Czechoslovakia, and...
Not even a country,
Czecho then.
Czech Republic.
Czech Republic and Slovakia. Let's just combine them. Not that they want to, but, you know, they had their... what was it called? The Velvet...
The
Revolution?
They had the Velvet Revolution, which was when...
93, wasn't it?
No, the Velvet Revolution was 89, when they got rid of the communists. But 92 or 93 is when they split the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That wasn't what I mean by the Velvet... when they split, whatever it was. Yes, yeah. Okay. No, I understand the history of the Czech Republic and Slovakia from a very high level. So I know that it's not just a country. It's not just one country.
Yeah,
so
yeah. I mean,
I think of Vancouver as one place, Vancouver and Victoria. So that I get in trouble for that too from people that live anywhere near there.
Yeah.
Vancouver's not a place, shithead.
No, I understand why people would be upset about that.
Anyway.
All right. So
what are we talking about? 4 countries. Wait, I got another country to put in here.
Okay.
Fuck, I don't know. The Congo?
Okay. Well, I mean, you almost hit one of them.
Okay, good.
So you said England, but the UK is one of our
top most
downloaded regions. But in order, the most downloads come from the United States.
Okay. That sounds reasonable.
Number 2 is the United Kingdom. Number three is actually kind of surprising in that it's Canada. I mean, I know we're Canadian, but I wouldn't have thought that, you know, our home country accounts for that many downloads. And the fourth one is Australia. So those those are the top four. Going down the list a little bit more, Germany and Ireland were pretty high as well. That's it. Otherwise, though, all from across the world, we have had downloads of this podcast in 125 different countries.
Nice.
That's almost all of them. I mean, I don't know how many countries there are right now, but
nobody knows how many countries there are, Chris.
Really?
Like, I'm serious. I don't think anybody really knows.
I mean, if
because there's countries within countries within countries. Like, there's like, you know, the areas of a country that are another country, and then inside that area that's another country, there's the original country that the whole thing is in. It's all very convoluted.
Yeah.
Just like they don't have any clue how many languages there are. That's fucked up, too. Like, what's the difference between English and English when you talk about the UK and Canada?
Or, yeah.
You know, are they two different languages? Sort of.
I mean, British English, American English. There's also Newfoundland English, which is weird. So
yeah.
There are 195 countries in the world today. And so if we have had downloads in 125 of them, that is 64% of all the countries in the world. Someone has downloaded our podcast.
That's cool.
Very cool. We have had in 13 years, Jason, and 614 episodes, almost 8 million total unique downloads across the entire catalog.
I've never done anything that factors into the millions before.
No. I mean, almost. We will pass 8 million, assuming we continue going, which we are, and covering all these other shows. So that is nuts.
That's pretty cool
and extremely crazy in my mind.
Wish you could a sponsorship. Somebody should sponsor us. I'd do ad reads.
We've had them in the past.
Yeah, I know, but let's get some good stuff going here.
All right, fine. 8 million downloads, people. We only need another 13 years to get 8 million more.
Yep.
I don't know. So those are some podcast numbers that, I don't know, maybe some people find interesting. I do. It's just kind of fun because I'm a bit of a nerd for this kind of stuff. And that's it. I mean, pretty nuts, I think, when all said and done.
That's pretty crazy. You want to know something funny? Just talking about thinking about the podcast in the early days of the podcast, and I just, a random memory came to me a few minutes ago. You know, the first few episodes of the podcast, you know what I had to do? It was before the TV show started.
Uh-huh.
And it was, like, we knew that there was a comic. Right?
Yes.
Like, you were reading the comic and you said, you got to read this comic. It's going to be a TV show and we should podcast about it. I'm like, yeah, totally fucking cool. Let's do that.
Yeah.
I had to create a cheat sheet. I had a cheat sheet. I still have a copy of it somewhere. I created it in Word or what have you. And I had things like Rick Grimes. Who's he married to? Lori Grimes, and their son is Carl.
Yeah.
And then there's, so I had all the names of who they were. And the actors that played them, because I didn't really know that either.
Uh-huh.
And what their relationships were, just to keep everything straight. And I wish I still had that cheat sheet, because I spend a lot of time saying, what's her name?
Yes. I think you may still need it.
I really do. I really should have. But it would be huge, though. I'd have to put it I could put it on the wall.
That would be fun.
This is a really great idea.
All right.
Okay, I wish I would have thought of this fucking 10 years ago.
Well, Jason, if you had it, you could tell me right now what the name of the actor was that played Jesus.
Jorge Garcia?
I knew it. Oh, that's funny. It was Tom Payne, by the way.
Of course it was.
Of course, yeah. Okay, that's a great idea. You should make your wall-sized Walking Dead character cheat sheet. That would be amazing.
Oh, you see, to put pins in it, and you take red yarn and fucking tie things together.
Yeah, showing relationships.
Oh, okay, let's do this again. Let's start over.
I'll start from the beginning? Yeah, okay.
We'll start over. I'll build a fucking chart on the wall and have all the relationships in there.
Different colors. If the person murdered the other person, it's a red thread. You know, if they're related, it's a green thread, yeah. Things like that.
Oh. My wife has rooms full of yarn. Like, as much Lego that I have, my wife has an equal amount of yarn.
Well, I'm glad you guys have hobbies. That's
we do have hobbies. Yeah. So if I need some colored yarn, I probably can track some down if I
right.
had to.
And if she needs a Lego minifig, you got about 1,000 behind you right now.
Yeah. She's like, what do you? No, she has her own. She I she oh,
of course
she has a whole set of Mandalorian armored minifigures.
Fun.
Like all the different Mandalorian armored characters that you can get in Lego minifigure form, she has.
Very fun.
And I put them in a nice case for her as well. That was her Christmas gift last year. And then they came out with another one, so I got to buy another case kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
With one more character.
Yeah.
So anyway, it happens.
It sure does.
And the Muppets. She has a minifigure case with all the Muppet characters in it too that I got for her.
I like it. So. Very, very fun. Are they on display or are they packed away in a drawer somewhere?
No, they're right on top of the one of the cabinets in the china cabinet in the dining room. She's a little bit frustrated because that's normally where the Christmas decorations go.
Mm-hmm.
We can't put them there right now because they're fucking minifigures up there.
Blocked by Lego.
Yeah.
Okay. So. I'm sure you'll work something out.
Yeah. It's a negotiation.
I have some personal stats here as well for myself, not for you. When we started this podcast, I was 34 years old. I am now 48, almost. I turned.
Okay.
Am I 48? I turned 48.
In
January. Yeah, I'm almost 48.
Yeah.
That's a long time. When we started, my two kids were 2 and 4. Were 2 years. One of them, and 4 months old, the other one.
Nice.
They are now 13 and 15.
Cool.
One of them is about to turn 16, before I turn 48, actually.
That's crazy.
That is nuts. I had two babies, basically. Well, a baby and a newborn, and now I've got two teenagers. Jasper wasn't alive when we started.
Nope.
He was born at some point, and now he's 6?
He's 6. I was holding him in my arms. As he was sleeping when Negan killed Glenn. We watched it together. He was asleep as a newborn in my arms.
Unbelievable. It's crazy. When I started a new day job in February 2010, which was just 5 months after the podcast started. I'm sort of still in that job. It's changed a little bit. The company's changed, but... it feels like forever ago in some ways. And in other ways, it feels like just yesterday. So it's weird.
I work for the same company. I've worked there for 19 years.
Yeah.
It's not the same job, but it's the same company.
Yeah, fair enough. I went to, over 13 years, I went to 7 Walker Stalker cons, I think. I went to 3 in Atlanta, 2 in New York, 1 in Chicago, and 1 in London, England. I don't think I went to any others. While I was there, I hosted panels with Danai Gurira, who of course played Michonne, Chandler Riggs, Caitlin Nacon, Tom Payne, and Xander Berkeley, who was Gregory.
I remember him being murdered.
Yeah. Maybe some others too, but those are the ones I can think of right now. I did one for Ash vs. Evil Dead too, which was really fun. And of course, like Melissa Hutchison and things like that, I did multiple panels with, and Jay Bonansinga, the author of most of the novels, I did lots of panels with him. So other panels, but I think those were the big actors that I did. I got to meet many of the actors, like Steven Yeun and Lauren Cohan, Lenny James.
Andrew Lincoln, we met. In Atlanta.
You and I met him the first year because you came to the first Atlanta with me.
I did, yep.
That was amazing. Who else? Norman Reedus, I met. Carol, I think I met. Were you there when we met Carol?
I was there.
There you go.
Yeah, I was running late and you talked to her for a little while I showed up eventually.
Oh, okay. Good.
I don't know where I was or what I was doing, but I was not there, but you were.
I don't remember either. So, yeah. Lots of them. It was really, really great. I went to 2 New York Comic Cons, and you went to one of them with me.
I did, yeah, at the Javits Center. That was fun.
You went to the second one, right? I went to
the
first one.
It was the second one, yeah.
Yeah, but I went to both of the main Walking Dead panels, and obviously you were at the second one with me. We had an interesting experience at that, I would say.
All they had was hot dogs. We were there for hours, and the only thing they had was fucking hot dog stand.
I know.
I mean, I like a good hot dog, but, you know, when there's 400 people in an auditorium, you got to feed those people if they're there all goddamn day.
Yeah, and we were lining up since 5 in the morning or whatever the hell it was. And,
yeah.
You know, that was fun. The second New York Comic Con was a very different experience than the first one. Just the same way that later Walker Stalker cons were very, very different than the first one, you know. The first New York that I went to, I felt like it was just so much easier. I just walked into the panel. I didn't have to line up at all, you know. I just went to it. And then the next year, line up outside down the street super early in the morning.
Pretty nuts.
So those are all experiences that I never would have had we not done this thing. And I think they're all very, very cool. And, just think back fondly on everything I got to do. And, you know, we got to do a couple times together.
Yeah.
So I don't know why. I mean, I think that I'm just bringing all this up because it's fascinating for me at least. And it just reminds me of how rewarding kind of all of this has been, and how many things that, like, just special stuff it has created and offered over the years. And it has nothing to do with the 8 million downloads, although those are cool. It's the panels and the trips and the people I've met and the friends and the relationships and the listeners and everything like that. I mean, I had fun on all those trips, but they're kind of just like a bonus. Right.
Yeah.
The main thing is just recording it and having the people like it. I guess, you know what I mean? You know, that's it. So that's kind of what the podcast has done in the last 13 years and what it's created. And I'm just super grateful for all of it.
Absolutely. Me too.
So anyways, that's that. We are going to continue with the podcast. We are going to power forward into the Walking Dead universe. Whatever comes next, I think it's Fear. We're going to be talking about that. The Daryl Dixon show, we're going to cover that. The Maggie and Negan show, the Rick and Michonne show, all of it. And I guess whatever else comes out there. There's one novel in the Walking Dead universe that we never covered. It was written by a different author, and it takes place in Japan. I haven't read it.
Interesting.
I don't see us going back to do that, but
oh man, it's not in Japanese, is it?
You never know. No, I don't think so.
I don't speak or read Japanese.
No, that would make it tricky. But we're going to cover all the TV shows. We're going to keep her going, and we very much hope that you will continue with us, whether you watch the shows or not. But, you know, watch the shows. Give them a chance. You never know what you might discover. They might be awesome.
Watch everything, all the time.
Everything, all the time, all at once.
All at once. You gotta watch that movie.
Yeah, I need to. That's not the actual title, but I know the movie, and I
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
That's the one. I want to watch it as well. Maybe I'll put that on the list for over the holidays. Here's what I'll do, Jason. I'm gonna watch that over the holidays.
Uh huh.
I'm gonna watch Seven over the holidays.
Good plan.
And what was the one you're talking about? The Vanishing.
The Vanishing, yeah. Watch that one.
Okay. Is there anything else you want me to put on the list for the next 2 weeks over the holiday break?
The new Avatar movie?
No, I don't want to see that. Listen, that's a whole other conversation because I am just not an Avatar person. I didn't really like the first Avatar. I've only watched it the one time.
I've only seen it in the theater, and I kind of don't have any interest in watching it again.
No.
And if I was going to go see the movie, or if I was going to see Avatar 2 in any way, shape, or form, I'd have to watch the first one again. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to do that, so I don't think I'll see the second one.
So you and I are not really Avatar people. That being said, I have heard some pretty great things about this second movie, and I am a little more interested in it because of that. But you're right. I'd need to go back and watch the first one to get myself back up to speed.
Do they still use their sexual organs to communicate with animals?
Well,
because that's really weird.
I don't know, but as of this moment, no, I'm not going to add Avatar to the list of what I'm watching over the break.
I mean, if you were doing it for comedy purposes, that'd be fine.
Right.
I think it might have been Denmark or Norway or somewhere, or Finland or somewhere, that has this children's character that has like a really, 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 really long penis, and he uses it to like lasso things and to save people from various things, and it's used for comedy purposes because, mm-hmm. you know, kids, you know, their humor is not very sophisticated.
Kids love a good dick joke.
Yeah, it's poop and pee and private parts. And,
yeah.
You know, and that's all good comedy. So yeah, use it for comedy. Fine. Don't use it in a serious movie where you're communicating with animals and you need to plug in your organ into their organ in order to communicate with them. And then later you have sex with someone and you plug your organ into their organ in order to have an intimate moment. It's like, fuck, James, what the hell are you doing there, pal?
Look,
take it easy.
I respect James Cameron a great deal. He's made some incredible films. He's an incredible filmmaker. I hear he's a bit of a dick, but
he is a bit of a dick,
but like, separate that out. He's made some amazing movies. I don't hold it against anyone that loves Avatar. It's fine. You know, like what you like. I mean, if that's your thing, that's great. I just wasn't captivated by it the same way everyone else was. And therefore, I don't have quite the interest in Avatar 2. But I don't know. You never know. Maybe I will see it at some point, probably at home someday. And if it's amazing, I don't know. Maybe the rest of this Avatar movies that are coming out are going to be awesome. I don't know.
All seven of them?
I don't know how many there are. There's a bunch.
Far too many.
Yeah. So that's a whole other thing. Didn't really mean to start talking about Avatar, but I'm going to watch Seven and The Vanishing over the break.
And Everything Everywhere All at Once?
That's the other one. That's right. Yeah. That's
and,
good.
And there's probably some other ones that you should watch.
Yeah, probably. We'll see. I'll think about the list. All righty. Well, that's it, everyone. That is where we're going to call it a year. This is going to be our last podcast for 2022. Hope you enjoyed it. We hope you've enjoyed everything we've done. I mean, I know nobody's listening at this point anymore because of all those statistics I threw out there, and that probably put everyone to sleep. But
no, people love numbers and spreadsheets and talking about spreadsheets. We should talk about how these numbers add up in order to make other numbers.
Okay, well, not right now, because people need to get on with their Christmas days, if that's what they do.
Yeah, then maybe we'll start an Excel podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about Excel formulas.
I would not be very competent to do that. I can't stand using Excel
anymore. I got your back, buddy. I'll help you out.
All right, fine.
That'll be a good premise. I'll teach you how to use Excel.
Boring. All right. Thank you so much, everyone. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. We will see you in the new year with more podcasts, more Walking Dead coverage, more of all of this. So if that's your thing, please join us. Until then, though, my name is Chris.
My name is Jason.
Thanks for listening.
Happy holidays.